Welcome to Level Up with Sherelle and Danny. We're here to help you take your health, fitness, and mindset to the next level.
It's time to level up.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Level Up with Sherelle and Danny. Today we are talking about building confidence.
I feel like everyone wants to be confident, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, even sometimes I'll get, oh, you're so confident. And I just wanted to start by highlighting that's not necessarily the truth in every area. Like, we don't walk around with all this confidence in everything that we do. It's been developed over a long period of time for sure. Mm. But we really just wanted to dig deep today in what actually confidence is and how to show it in certain areas and also how to build it.
Yeah, very well said. So by definition, confidence means feeling sure of yourself and your abilities, but not in an arrogant way. There's a difference between being confident and just being cocky. Okay.
Yes.
So it's like in a realistic, secure way. So not about feeling superior to other people, but like an inner knowledge that you know your shit and you know what you're doing and you're capable of achieving the task at hand.
Mm. Whenever I feel like someone's entered a room and they've got that charisma and they've got that character, that swag, they're there, they're owning the room, I instantly trust them. And that's the thing as to not like trust them with my life. But for example, if a coach had confidence in what they were programming me, or if your nurse had confidence when they're putting the cannula in, like you're going to trust them and you're going to feel safe in them doing so. So confidence isn't just about what you see visually. It's also about building relationships, rapport with people and executing tasks to your best ability.
Yeah, that's right. And I feel like it is an acquired skill in certain areas, but then you can also just have kind of like an ignorance is bliss approach. I remember when I was younger, when you sort of like, you just don't really care. It's just like, okay, there's no expectations. I'm young. I'm just doing this thing. I'm confident. But then you kind of grow up and you feel sort of societal pressures and maybe you put more pressure on yourself. And yeah, so some people just naturally have it in areas and other people need to work on it. But I feel like you can't be 100% confident in all areas. So I'm excited to sort of share some of the things we use in order to build confidence in what we do on a day to day. But then also, yeah, how we can look for confidence in other people, because it's not always just about the words that they talk. There's so much unspoken sort of body language and energy that we're like, wow, okay, they're really confident. And as you said, I trust them, which is important.
Yeah. I can't remember what the statistics are, but I think it's like 90% is like nonverbal communication. Like the words that we use are such a small part of like all these, I guess, viewpoints, confidence being one of them. It's in our body language. It's in our eye contact. It's in the tone of our voice. It's it's in our stance. But as you were saying that, I was sort of reflecting on, you know, when I was younger, like a child, you do run around, you have that like lack of care when it comes to things. I've been recently getting back on the rollerblades. I brought some new rollerblades the other day and I went to the skate park. Luke's like petrified for me, by the way. He's got me like covered in these weird things. They don't fit over my quads My knee pads. Oh, they're horrible. I've got the ones on my hands. They're definitely the most
important. You would look so cute. Have you posted a photo of yourself in all your gear?
No way.
Come on.
I'll tell everyone. Yeah, I got these sick ass rollers. Anyways, when I was younger, I used to love skates. Like I used to get around the skates. I used to go to skate park and go down and like do all the crazy shit. And now I'm like, okay, take it easy. You know, frontal cortex a bit more developed. I don't take as many risks, but I was at the skate park and I was watching these like guys who would have been, I don't know, seven, like really young, just tearing it up like with their skateboard. And I was like, oh my God, like that part of me was like, be careful, like don't hurt yourself. But I was like, we just have so much ignorance when we're younger, right? Yeah. Like we just have little care factor because we don't actually know the risk yet. And I say this because at work, for example, like when you're you know, at a cafe or whatever, like when you're younger, you're probably just like running around. You don't really care as much, sliding around. There's water on the ground. Doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
When you get a bit older, you understand the repercussions of certain things and therefore you may be a little bit more careful. There's also a bit more responsibility that comes when you're older. Like you have a level of respect that you have to uphold. And I just think we have a completely different lens when we get older. And this affects our confidence, right? Because there is that weight in things that we do now.
Exactly. Like as young kids in the skate park, if we fell over, grazed our knees, or we might cry. Yeah. I remember once I got stitches in my chin. All right, whatever. These things happen. You sort of get up and get on with it. But now we have to think about our work. We have to think about, you know, all the other things. No wonder Luke's sort of panicking. He's like,
our livelihood.
Business, man.
I know. And that's a really good point, because even from Luke's background, he comes from like a sporting background, and he's had like, he broke his Achilles recently, out for 6 months, lots of sporting injuries that have had lots of repercussions. So to him, he's like, the risk has to be less than, like, the benefit has to significantly outweigh the risk.
Yeah.
Whereas when we haven't had certain experiences, like I've definitely had injuries and stuff like that, but I haven't had anything as extensive as what he's been through in the past with football and basketball and breaking fingers and things like that.
Yeah.
And I just think those tiny little scars that we have from, you know, potentially falling over and maybe losing your front teeth, you know, at the skate park when you're younger. Those tiny little experiences that we go through, they really do shape and impact how we show up and how our confidence can come through as well.
That's so true. As I've gotten older, I feel like I've become way more of a hypochondriac, and I hate it because I'm ridiculous these days, but I used to be the most carefree person ever when it came to my body and like injuries and all. I would not care. This morning, because I always talk about my allergies, and I'm actually getting an allergy test in 2 weeks just to put it to rest. Someone reached out to me and said, you need to just go get a test. I'll give you something for that. This morning I ate a kiwi and then I started getting a rash on my neck. Straight away, jump on Google. I'm like, oh my God, am I going to go into anaphylaxis? And I'm like, Danny, you're being fucking ridiculous. I would laugh at myself as a kid looking forward now, just with little self-awareness things. And I think it's because, A, like you said, we've had so many more experiences happen to us. We know what it's like and we don't want them again. But then also having an increased level of self-awareness, like we just notice things. And sometimes that can be a curse, because you might notice tiny things and then send yourself into a bit of a spiral.
Well, having knowledge is one thing, right? And I think this is the layer that we get when we're older. Knowledge is one thing. We can go, oh my God, is it this? Yes, no. Okay, awesome. Whereas then when we have knowledge about knowledge, that's when things get complex, because we've got all this context. It's like, am I having a reaction? This is it, that? Or no, this isn't my thyroid?
Seriously.
We're just layering on these different components. And to some extent, that's just part of life. Like, we're going to have more responsibilities and more weight and more things and more knowledge about knowledge as we age, and therefore more possibilities of answers and more things to question, right? And it can be like, it's incredible. Like, I couldn't imagine that if we were still had the care factor of like our 10-year-old self when we're 60, we might be in trouble.
Right?
So our brain needs to give us those warning signs of like, look, don't go all in at the moment. But I hope you get your allergies sorted, because it's super frustrating, right?
Yeah, 2 weeks, we should be right, hopefully. Thank you. Yeah, so there are certain traits that we can notice in other people, which we've kind of touched on already, just to deem someone to be confident, or what we can pay attention to in ourselves. So as we mentioned, body language. So someone sort of standing tall, upright, making eye contact, which I feel like during lockdown, it's been a little bit harder to sort of maintain eye contact personally, just because you're sort of not used to like seeing that person for a while. And then, so eye contact, standing up nice and tall. Body language is everything when it comes to confidence. Like if we look at someone walking down the street, we can automatically tell the mood that they're in. Like by the look on their face, are they hunched over? We can just tell straight away. So body language is massive.
Yeah. I've also found it really hard, like with wearing masks all the time. It's like, are you smiling? You smile with your eyes. Like you walk past someone and you're smiling at them. And I'm like, are they, you know, and those sorts of things really do impact how we can read people. Even things like Botox, like even things like fillers, even things like filters, like all these sorts of things augment our perception of what reality is or what people are actually experiencing.
True. I never look angry anymore. I can't frown.
I'm like, oh,
he's happy all the time.
Just call Daddy a bitch, and she's like, no emotion.
Still smiling.
That's fine with Daddy, just lands differently. But yeah, like these are all things to consider, yeah, right? Like in this day and age. And, you know, even when I was going through like my Bachelor of Nursing, that was just drilled into us. Communication is so much less what we say, especially like I've had a lot of experience nursing and caring for people that don't even speak English. Trying to communicate through translators. And I'll tell you what, like my communication skills from working with general population and just even understanding like how high I'm standing, like moving down, making people feel safe, comfort zones, when they look down, what that means, like learning how to read people. This is a skill that takes years and years and years and years to develop. Mm. And it's always going to change. Like there's always a better way to be able to communicate. That's why there's communication coaches as well. But I also think there's no better way than just trialing new things and just experimenting and seeing what happens.
Yeah.
You'll be really surprised about your default behaviors that you naturally go to. And I think when you can, like, for example, if you do a lot of things on Zoom and you watch back, you might pick up on certain traits or behaviors or resources or things that you do in the way that you exhibit yourself and present confidence or lack of.
Yeah, yeah, perfect. And I think a lot of it is, it starts from our mindset and our thoughts. So the example of you being with your patients, like if we're not confident, we won't actually really be listening to them because we'll be just thinking about ourselves. Oh my God, how do I look? What am I doing? Mm. This, that. And it just really hinders your ability to be a good like professional and practitioner or person. So by calming down our thoughts, we are actually more able to hold space for that other person. Mm-hmm. It's like, have you ever met someone for the first time and then you're a little bit like, oh, okay. And then you forget what their name is straight away because you're just too busy worrying about you. Like that always would happen to me. Then, like, hey, I'm so-and-so, but I'm too busy thinking, okay, look, cool, whatever, like this and that. And then you don't actually listen to what they're saying.
Mm. It's really easy to get distracted, right, and have your attention. Seriously, I listened to that podcast from Andrew Huberman on ADHD and I'm like, I think I have that. Like, I think my attention span can be ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
When I'm in other places. And like, it really does impact a lot of the things that you do. Like, you not only do you look uncertain and unconfident in the way that you're presenting yourself, but you do like a less of a job in what you're trying to do. Like, we all know what it feels like when you know someone's not with you, right? When they're just not in the room, right? Like they're actually thinking about like five steps ahead or they're thinking about the what ifs or they're thinking about something that's happened and you just know that they're not present. And that really does disrupt things.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's not nice. So should we move on to sort of how to build self-confidence, and we're going to touch on, you know, body confidence, confidence in work, social situations, and of course confidence in the gym as well.
I thought you were going to say confidence in the bedroom then.
Hey, that's on Gab's podcast. Yeah. We can go down that path. We'll see where it ends up.
Take it away.
So as we mentioned, self-awareness, okay? So recognize the times where you might not feel as confident. So for me, if I feel stressed and overwhelmed, like what you said with the attention span going everywhere, like I will not feel my most confident if my energy feels a bit anxious. Mm. And you can see that in people. They're sort of fidgety, sort of all over the place, and they just look a little bit, just not fully cool, calm, and collected. Mm. So self-awareness and recognizing when your confidence falls. Mm. And it can be sort of things as well. You might not be wearing an outfit that you feel too good in, or like other examples. They can be as superficial as we want, or they can be from our thoughts as well. But it's important just to pay attention to the little triggers that sort of impact your confidence.
Mm, yeah, really well said. I think self-awareness is something that it's not like a skill that you master. It's like an ongoing education that you do in yourself because you're always changing. So how can you ever be fully aware of who you are when you're always developing? And I think where I see a lot of people going wrong when it comes to this is they might have an insecurity or they have a lack of confidence in a certain skill set or a level of knowledge that they do or don't have, right? So the next thing they do is they sign up to the next online course that they think is going to give them confidence in this area. And to me, like I see this all the time with new coaches. They're like, what should I do? What course should I do to feel confident in this? And I'm like, maybe you need to like just look internally and be like, why am I not confident in this? Am I trying to be perfect? Am I trying to know it all? Do I have imposter syndrome? Because maybe that's the thing we need to address. It's got nothing to do with the confidence. And I just think as coaches and as people and as professionals, as we care, if we care about what we do and how we show up, we have to invest in our self-awareness as a primary, like outsource as a qualification in ourselves, because how can you be authentic? How can you build a brand? How can you do anything? How can you show up at work if you don't actually know what makes you tick, what makes you confident, and what allows you to be yourself as well? Otherwise, on the inside, you can have all these like different things showing up and you can feel like a bit erratic and a bit like schizophrenic on the inside because you don't actually understand, okay, what does it feel like to be myself?
Yeah. And even if that means just changing what you're doing, like having the self-awareness to say, oh, I don't really like my job anymore or my group of friends or, you know, or what I do, or just like change what you can. I'm a big believer in that. You know, we have so much ability to find opportunities everywhere that just have the self-awareness to recognize, okay, it's time to change my path now. I'm not feeling too good with what I'm doing at the moment.
Yeah. And that's huge to be able to actually pause and do that. And, you know, if we're not, this is why like I love journaling, but it doesn't have to be in the tense of sitting down with a, you know, a notepad and pen. It can be in the shower. You know, I do a lot of talking, like almost as journaling. I talk to myself sometimes. I talk to Luke. Like I like to verbalize things. It makes them real to me. And then sometimes it sort of like recognizes when you coach yourself, like when you ask yourself questions, like what part of this am I catastrophizing? Or like, what's the most obvious path forward? Like when you ask yourself questions, all that sort of stuff is just reflection. Because if we're not reflecting on the things that we're going through, whether it's a feeling, an emotion, an event, like you're just going to go round and round in circles. And by default, you'll repeat the same behaviors.
Yeah, I love that. And for me, I start to feel sort of things physically first before I know that I need to check in with my mindset, just because I don't actively, you know, sit down and maybe I don't give myself that space every day, because you kind of go along doing what you do and it's great until one day it's like, oh yeah, something I just don't feel 100%. I need to give myself that time to reflect and then, you know, maybe see what's coming up and if there's anything that's sort of making me not feel too good. So finding those limiting beliefs or maybe a story that you're telling yourself subconsciously. But it doesn't come until you give yourself that space, whether it be, as you said, journaling or in the shower or wherever, like a nice quiet place is for yourself. But then also having someone that you can bounce your ideas off or verbalize to as well. Yeah. It's so important to do that.
Yeah, because that, I guess we, in real time, we make everything so much worse than what it is. And it's really hard to get yourself out of that mindset and until you verbalize it. And if you can listen to yourself, you're like, God, I sound like an idiot. Like, that's not true, is it? You know, when you actually say it, whereas you can think it and it just goes around and around in circles in a rabbit hole in your brain, it just becomes this big thing. But what you said there about I notice it in my body before my mind, I'm very much the same. And I think a lot of people that are always busy and on the go and five steps ahead, you know, it does take actually something for us to slow down before we do check in. And that's okay. Like, I think hindsight's not a bad thing, but we've spoken in the past about certain physical things that might show up. It's like, actually, like, I'm really exhausted physically, or I've got eczema, like it's not normal for me, or I've got digestive issues, or my period hasn't come this month, or whatever it might be, or my sleep. Like, we're really good at looking at data and objective stuff and go, okay, I need to slow down. My goal, like moving forward, would be in the future that I can recognize before it gets to that. But I also know that that's not a quick fix, because with the pace of things, it's hard to make sure that you're pausing all the time to like check in. It sounds so easy, doesn't it? But it's so much harder in practice.
And maybe we don't even have to do it every day. Otherwise, I'm sure we would. Like, sometimes to sit there and, you know, try and look for something's not good also. So you just have to tap into yourself and recognize what, when you need to sort of slow down and have that awareness, or if you can just sort of go about your day to day. But yeah, as soon as you change your thoughts, and not to sound wishy-washy, but your thoughts do become your actions and that becomes your life. We're both such big believers on that. And now it's not an overnight thing to do that, but it all starts by just catching yourself out. And maybe you don't feel like you deserve money or deserve love or any of those things. So you have to just sort of hold that mirror up to yourself and find it first. And then you can start to make a change.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if you've read this one, Danny, but incredible book recommendation for that is Joe Dispenza, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself.
Yeah,
if
you want one of the goodies.
Oh, if you want any evidence that your mind really does impact your body and your health and your longevity and everything that you do in your genetics and epigenetics, that book. I was just like listening
to it. He's the best. Yeah, the audiobook's a bit dry, isn't it? Bless him. But it's you guys have to listen to it. But you can also, get the physical book. And I'm such a highlighter person. Yeah. Like, I love highlighting books. But anything by Joe Dispenza, even his YouTube videos, amazing and so eye-opening. Like, thanks for bringing that up, actually.
Really important. He's great. Cool. But yeah, I guess like when it comes to building confidence, there is a lot of different things that you can do, but it has to start with first understanding yourself. And, you know, the best time to start self-awareness practices and reflection was like yesterday. Like it's something I wish I started a long time ago, because I only started including that sort of stuff because I guess I did lack confidence in areas, like whether it was direction or knowing what I was doing or not being certain on tasks or feeling a bit lost, right? That strips you of your confidence. So when you can reflect and be like, actually, I am making progress. I am on the right track. I am doing a good job. Like I am taking steps forward. It's not as bad as I'm making it out to be. That's how you build confidence.
Yeah. And even if you need to make your goals a little bit more achievable and smaller, because often people just make goals that are so out there, but then by missing the smaller pieces in between, it can sort of seem unachievable. And then we just don't do anything towards it. So set yourself little goals that you know you'll get at the start and then tick them off or turn them green in your calendar or whatever you want to do, just to continue to build that confidence. Because if we feel like we're capable of achieving tasks, that will help our confidence tremendously.
This is actually an approach that I like to do with clients of training. Like I would rather start people off in like a regressed program, like looking at certain things rather than being like, oh, you know, they're advanced, they should be here. And then having to regress later on. Like if we can slowly progress and go with momentum, it's so much more motivating and reinforcing than having to take steps back. And I'm not saying that it like has to happen or should happen or won't happen or whatever it might be. But within everything, it's repetition over a long period of time and starting small, like, and then building from there. It's like, it's a fine line between setting big ambitious goals and then, you know, underselling yourself, you know, there's somewhere in between. So I think the smaller, the better. Like have your where you want to be. Of course, that should feel daunting looking at that. And that's okay. Then you break it down from there in small achievable goals that build that like self-efficacy in you that you can achieve it.
Yeah. And it's important to recognize that you are going to have days where you feel a bit anxious or feel a bit like, oh, like that's so normal, but it's how you manage it that is important and not letting it blow up and get the better of you. Because if we separate all the things that kind of stress us out in a day to day, individually, they're not too bad, but it's when it compounds. So we really need to sort of put out those little spot fires before it gets big. So just reward yourself as well on like the little things that you do well, or say, my hair looks good today, or geez, I look good in that color top or whatever. Just keep pumping up your own tires. Yeah. And it's not arrogant. We have to be our biggest fan. I think it's just so nice just to give yourself a little compliment every now and then. It doesn't even have to be physically. You could have cooked a really nice meal or helped do something for someone else, but just bloody reward yourself.
I'm really glad that you said that, because I was talking about this the other day. I don't know what it is that happens to us as young girls, but there's like this preperceived idea that if you take a compliment, you're stuck up or you're arrogant. Or it's like, I don't know if it's from school where, you know, chicks are like, oh, you look so skinny. And you're like, no, oh, thanks. It's like, you do think that, don't you? And it's like,
They're like on Mean Girls.
Oh, so you do.
The skirt. Like,
Yes. So, you know, and I think that's that people mistake confidence with arrogance. And perhaps when we were younger, it was hard to see the difference sometimes, right? But there's a way that you can, I guess, present confidence and self-worth, which is what that is to me, without coming across in an arrogant way, because you're not. Your intention's different. And look, if people think that you're being arrogant, that's on them. That's their issues, not yours.
Yeah.
But what I often find, and even with like working with female clients, I'll say, like, I'll give them a compliment and it's like an instantly deflect it. Like, oh yeah, but you know, it was a good day or whatever, you know, and it's instant deflect. I'm like, no. Like, if we don't accept the compliments, they don't exist. We actually tell ourselves. And then like, I guess when you put women in a group, this is what I find fascinating. When you put females in a group together, and if someone tries to deflect a compliment or something, there'll be other people being like, no, that's awesome, and like reinforcing that. And I also think, I'm like, if I deflect a compliment that someone else gives me, what message is that putting on them and what they think about their own worth? Because if someone says, oh, you're so strong on that lift, and I go, no, I'm not, I'm still weak, and they go, oh, but I only do half of that, that's what they're thinking about.
Well,
I just think not only is confidence important for your own self-worth, it's also super important for others.
Yeah. And then for whoever's giving out the compliment to be rejected, like they're going to be like, oh, it's a shock to them as well. And guys and girls go through this, obviously, but that's very important to bring up. And then the nature of, again, the people you surround yourself with is so important. I think the transition of my confidence from being, as I've shared on here, really shy in high school and all of that, just getting like surrounding myself with like different people, I think helped. It's quite hostile when you're in an environment where with people trying to find themselves, you know, what we all know what high school's like, but you know, leaving school, keeping a handful of people that make you feel good and you can be yourself around, and finding new people. And then of course getting out of puberty and that awkward phase definitely helped, but then also becoming sure of who you are as an adult, as you grow up. So although our confidence doesn't always improve with age, like it does sort of help, just because we have different priorities and different powers, and we can sort of change our scenarios a bit better when we're a bit older, I find. That's what helped me anyway.
I still remember, as you were saying that from high school, I had this memory pop up. Might share it.
Yeah, please.
But I was, one of my best friends, Stacey, I'm in her wedding. She's amazing. Her mum is like incredible. Just the most humble woman ever. I think it was year 8 or year 9 biology. I still remember being at her place, and I can't remember if she was saying something about herself, like her body image or something like that. But I still remember her mum saying to us, girls, there's enough people that are going to speak down to you in this world. Don't do it to yourself. Oh, and it sort of landed with me, and I was like, wow, you're so right. There's enough people that are going to kick you, right? There's enough people that are going to pour shit on you. Why should we do it to ourselves? Like, we have to have that self-respect to be able to recognize our own wins, right? So that other people can recognize theirs, and get rid of this, like, oh, you're being arrogant, you're being confident, like don't show your wins, don't be too proud. Like, why not? I don't understand where that comes from.
As they say in Australia, apparently it's the worst, like tall poppy syndrome. It's easier to cut down the tall poppy than grow to their height. So it's very much a thing here. So a lot of people just find it easier just to tear someone else down, where it's like, well, put in the work, mate. We're putting in the work to grow, to be a tall poppy. So, but that's the thing, like, the more we grow, we want to help other people on our way as well. It's not just, and as we mentioned at the start, it's not arrogance or feeling superior. It's just us feeling good about ourselves, because then our energy is better for other people. We reflect that on other people, and it's better. So yes, you can't always share your wins with certain people, unfortunately. I think it's important to know which friends or family you can talk about money, you can talk about business, you can talk about personal life. Yep, we all categorize our friends. I think it's important, because there's no point telling a big business idea to someone that you know is just going to throw it back in your face, or talk about going on a date with someone that, you know, they're not going to support your actions. Just take that awareness as well and categorize people. Okay, they're my fun friend, or they're who I can get business advice from, or things like that as well.
Yeah.
I don't have to know, but...
Yeah, the good old work of like Brené Brown, right? It always comes up, is like knowing who to take feedback from. Like, if they're not in there with you, or they're at a different stage, like, you know, maybe you reserve where you bring those things up, because if we're not going to do anything with the feedback, Like, what's the point of actually asking for it, so to speak, or sharing it?
Sometimes people ask for feedback from people because they know they're going to say, no, it's a bad idea, then they won't take action. Don't be that person as well. Yeah, self-sabotaging.
Yeah, don't be that person. That's just self-awareness though, isn't it? Like, if you've got that self-awareness, it's sort of like, actually, I'm back what I'm doing. More chefs in the kitchen is not a good idea. No. Right? Like, I need to call my own shots. And too many opinions spoil things. Too many chefs spoil the broth. Like,
that's it. The analogies are in full swing. I love it. She's cooking, mate.
But I remember reading a quote and it was like, her progress or her success will not undermine yours. Like, we can all grow together. It doesn't mean just because someone else is killing it. Like, support her. That's how everyone rises up, right? I think, and we got this at the start when we started a podcast together. I see it all the time in the fitness industry, where collaboration is it's not done often, right? In the fitness space, it's like, I've got the methods, I've got the answers, I know it all. And it's reserved in that box because, like you said, the tall poppy wants to be the tallest.
Yeah.
All. They don't want other people up there. They don't want to champion other people with them. And I think that's the scarcity model, right? When you've got self-awareness, though, this is why the piece of it, when you've got self-awareness and being like, I'm really content in who I am, what I'm doing, and my mission is greater than myself, then you don't mind aligning with other people and also sharing that.
It's the best because you learn and then, you know where to delegate as well. We've all got teams that, we don't have to do all the work all the time because that'll be exhausting too and very close-minded. So stay open-minded and know that, like, someone else's way might work for their client, It's not always about set in stone because and we've spoken about this on so many episodes, there are that many variables of what makes up an individual human that not everyone's going to fit the box that you've created. So know when to delegate out, know when to, team up with someone. There's no way that I would have made it to episode 99 on a podcast just on my own. Like, it's so cool. And nearly episode 100 next week. But another story.
100, but good point.
Also, a lot of people use poor language as motivation, which short term maybe it's okay, like talking down on themselves, like it's never okay, but short term it might yield a result. You might say something bad about yourself and get up and go work hard or do it to prove someone else wrong, but you're always going to hit a wall, whether it be you just shoot your confidence completely or you get exhausted because you feel like everyone's just watching you and trying to chase you when actually no one actually cares. So we can't use poor language as motivation, right? We need to just change that. Like, I've noticed that a lot in people.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it saddens me, to be honest, because sometimes I'll hear the way people talk about themselves and I'm like, oh my God, did you just call yourself like a lazy piece of shit? Like, literally, some people will talk to themselves in a really bad way.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, to me, it's really triggering because I can't, it's been a long time since I've had negative self-talk, to be honest. Like, I notice things come up for sure where I'm like, oh, I feel quite watery today, I'm due for my period, or I feel weak in the gym, or I notice these sorts of things come up because they are real to me. But it doesn't necessarily mean that that is me and I have to express that as well and reinforce it. And I'm also like, well, don't reward that behavior in yourself as well. Like, I'm not saying like suppress it and don't speak about it and internalize it, but I'm just saying, well, if you are going to stare in front of the mirror and say, yeah, I'm fat, like, you're actually going to start believing it. And that's what we're talking about with Joseph Spencer's work and his books. Like, what we say is what we become. So if you want to exhibit confidence, you have to start demonstrating it and reflecting it in your tone, your action, your verbal, your nonverbal, your thoughts. And, fake it until you make it. It's something that I've always sort of thought of myself. And I know that some people think, oh, you can't fake it till you make it. It doesn't work. My process or thought around it is that sometimes to get started, you got to be your own cheerleader and you got to be like, okay, like, let's go. I might not have everything I need right yet, but I've got enough to start and I can just start taking those steps forward. It's not like you're going to be incompetent and think you're going to go in and be a brain surgeon. But a lot of the times that's not what we're talking about. We're just talking about a lack of confidence in a particular area that we wanted to make moves in. So if we can start like faking the mindset, like in our brain being like, you are like, you've got this. The same as like approaching a bar, like with a new PB. You haven't done that before. It's new. You haven't done that weight. But if you don't approach it with confidence, then you're setting yourself up for failure and you're definitely not going to be able to practice it.
Yeah, yeah. So getting that initial sort of motion happening by changing your thoughts, as you said, but then it won't be fake anymore, like down the track. Yeah.
Until you make it.
That's it. There you go. You love that phrase. There you go.
It's a good, under the bar.
Good explanation. Please don't. So maybe we can get onto some of the scenarios. You already mentioned a little bit about work, so we can go into that. I think, again, when we're doing face-to-face work or even on Zoom, body language is important. And initial first impressions with or anyone, I suppose, but like a strong handshake, you know, and eye contact and standing tall. And I know when I'm doing my seminars, even though inside, like my heart's doing backflips on my stomach sometimes, I always think, okay, just stand tall, be the presence, you know, you just remember little things like that and make eye contact or even don't, like have your eyes up, but look at the tops of people's heads. Yes. Little tricks like that. I think, in work and business, you want to feel like you're in the hands of someone that knows what they're doing and you can trust them, as you said earlier.
For me, it was always about, I guess, letting go of a lot of perfectionism, like things having to be perfect, because if we're striving towards perfectionism, we're already not going to achieve it because it doesn't really exist. And for people like us, there's always going to be room for improvement. So I feel like for me, being like, I'm going to aim for my best. And my best is a cool, calm, collected way. When I don't feel confident, I'm a million miles an hour. Yeah. So it's about recognizing in yourself how you respond to nervousness. And for me, also like reframing that and being like, am I nervous or am I excited? Because that to me, they feel the same in the body, heart rate, breathing rate, just energy, eyes. And almost when I was like, I'm not nervous. I'm excited for this opportunity to be doing this, to be here, to be connecting with these people. I haven't met this person. Am I nervous? Maybe I am nervous. Nervous isn't bad either. It just means that it's new territory. I also think that, you know, the last 12 to 18 months has changed the way that we communicate a lot, particularly through screens, right? And even though like Zoom's incredible and like things have progressed to accommodate for that new way of communication, it's not the same. And I think everyone's probably experienced this, but going back to what is, you know, normal, quote unquote, normal life, that can feel scary for people. Like you can feel unconfident in the cafe. Like I noticed that I do. I'm like, wow, I feel out of my comfort zone here. And I'm just not sure. And that's also okay. Like I said, it doesn't mean that you don't have the skill or the confidence, right? It just means that you don't have the, like it's new territory. It's something that's new in your body.
Yeah. And because the feelings of excitement and fear are so similar, you know, increased heart rate, we might sweat a little bit, we'll get a bit fidgety or can't concentrate. That's why paying attention to the language that complements that is really important, because then often there's an inner dialogue of, as you said, maybe, you know, in the cafe, oh, this is a new experience. Okay. That's not the worst thing. But then if we're at work and we get those feelings accompanied by, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing, then it's something we need to take action on. Okay, how can we know what I'm doing? Am I overreacting? Do I need to ask someone for help? Like, we're all about asking people for help, and that's so fine. But pay attention to not really always the physical symptoms, but the dialogue that comes with it.
Absolutely. I also think like another huge characteristic that can come second to self-awareness is having a growth mindset, because I feel like that's embodying a lot of what we're talking about as well. And like having a growth mindset is really like the ability to know that you're going to get to where you need to be through hard work, grit, and like consistency, rather than being perfect or getting it right all the time, etc. We know that, you know, effort is going to really equal the result, or consistency over a long period of time, not going all in on certain things, because we can't be curious if we don't have a growth mindset. If we're very fixed in our way of thinking and it is or it isn't, or it should or it shouldn't be, or it don't or can't, if we're using this sort of language, you know, then it's going to be really hard to like flick the script and be able to change our mindset. And a lot of people will say like, oh, I can't do that. And like, instead of saying can't, like we should be saying, I can't do that yet. you know, and just having a bit more growth and a bit more perspective and a bit more curiosity that shows up in the way that we approach situations, especially if they're new.
I love that. I love that. And then also another element of fixed versus growth mindset. If you guys haven't listened to that episode called Fixed versus Growth Mindset, we did a whole awesome episode on it, but you know, just with clients as well and recognizing, okay, sometimes someone might not be happy with something, but just take on feedback and make a change. Like business isn't always going to be perfectly how we planned it. I mean, there are so many moving parts in a business or in a workplace that communication and being able to take on feedback, particularly from those that we are serving, is so important. Now, you're allowed to feel, you know, if something doesn't go to plan and okay, all the chat is going to come up, maybe I'm not good enough, blah, blah, blah. But if your client knows that you've actively asked for their feedback and opinion and made the change for them, they're going to get over it. Like it's fine. We can't always, like no matter what, whether we're the client or the coach, we can't have an expectation that they're always going to be perfect. But I know personally, if I feel like I can voice my thoughts or opinion to someone, then they're going to make a change, I'll be happy too. I'd be like, thanks. That's awesome.
Yeah. I also think as well, it's important to recognize in yourself what behaviors are a result of lack of confidence, what you naturally default to or what pathway you go down. And as you were saying that, like something I notice is when people have a bad week or they lack confidence or they're not feeling great in their skin or what they've been doing or they've had, you know, they've fallen off track, they won't check in. And that's usually the first thing that'll happen. We're like, oh, we're such and such. We already know, right? It's just that they haven't felt like showing up. And that's something I'm really big on. I'm like, we show up on the good and the bad weeks because when we fail, we focus on failing better. We don't fail backwards. We fail forwards. It's about understanding that those bad check-ins are just, if not more, as important as the good check-ins because they serve as benchmarks and reminders and reflection points. And if we're not reflecting on where we tripped up and where we lost confidence throughout the week, what practices and promises we let go of, you're just going to repeat that behavior mindlessly because if we don't make the unconscious conscious, it's just a default behavior.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. We kind of gone on a tangent. We're going to talk about work and stuff, but it's all relevant, I suppose. Anything else with work? I don't know. I'm trying to,
The way you show up in anything is the way you show up in everything. And I think that's
why fill the silence with an analogy. I love it.
But the way we do show up in work though, like this is why, when we sit down to talk about like whether we're going to talk about confidence with our body or with our training or with work or with business or with social media, it's all the same.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's really confusing when you see it divided, when there's confidence in social media, but there's not in real life. That's really hard. You know, we want to make sure that there is consistency in the way that we are showing up.
Yeah, it's easy to feel confident in certain elements. I suppose social media for some people is like a mask, but then for other people it's not. So again, it comes back to that awareness of where am I confident and do I actually have to be confident in all areas? Well, maybe not. It doesn't matter. Some people don't like having a big social media and that's fine too if they feel good about it. So it's just recognizing that we have our own individual scenarios and just because we like talking on podcasts doesn't mean that you have to like talking on podcasts and things like that, for example.
I also think when it comes to like body confidence, there's like this warped sense of like people that are, I don't know, WFF pros and fitness models and all these things are super confident all the time in their skin. And there's a difference between being confident in your skin and like just having respect for yourself. Like I don't feel comfortable in my skin all year round. Like I didn't in lockdown, like I'd gained a little bit of weight and I was not being able to train properly and practices had gone. And, you know, I didn't feel super confident, but I still had self-worth and I was like, that's okay though, like this will end, this will be a new chapter, I'll move forward, I'm not losing progress, like I'm just hitting the pause. Like it's about reframing it and understanding that like you don't have confidence or not, you know, you've, it's a skill and you've also got to like practice it and like nourish it and it doesn't happen by accident.
Yeah, I'm just reflecting back on a photo shoot that I did, one of my first ones, and I looked great, but on the day, like I didn't do as well as what I did in the show. And then all these thoughts started coming in my mind. And although on the outside, I looked freaking awesome. And I'm just going to say it because I worked hard to look like that. I just felt like a mess internally. And that was reflected in my eyes, in my posture, in the way I almost walked out of that photo shoot just because I did my own head in. So then I had to really sit down with myself and say, what is going on? Like, and then practice. I showed up, you know, a couple of months later to another photo shoot and really worked on my thoughts and how to channel that confident person. You know what it's like in photo shoots and on stage, and you've got a picture of Beyonce behind you, and like I would tap into like the inner Beyonce, and then and you've got a picture of you next to you. You should be sitting in front of the one of Beyonce. I want to see the photo of you instead. The chair's covering the photo of yourself, but it looks great. Things like that as well. So I think mindset is one of the biggest factors, because we all have different shapes and sizes, and it's beautiful, but it's what we tell ourselves that will really deem whether we're confident or not, not just because we reached a certain number on the scales.
Yeah. Confidence is not a look, it's a feeling. And I think that people think, oh, she looks so confident. You know, it's a feeling, it's a persona, it's a charisma. And I think of like the transformation division at the WBFF. Incredible, those like incredible. Perhaps they don't look like a WBFF bikini pro. They don't give out pro cards for that category, but they have done the work. They have practiced everything. They've built internal confidence, and they own it. Right. Yeah. And we've sat there and watched girls come out that look incredible, that just don't show it. They don't have the charisma. They don't have the confidence. They don't have the sass. And people just go, she just doesn't have the stage presence.
Well, stage presence, that's how they categorize it.
It's confidence. So if you've taken shortcuts and you haven't done the work and you haven't done the things that you know are going to build confidence, you know, it doesn't matter how you look. And the same with the photo shoot. I think it took me to get to a very lean stage and realized that it didn't change my confidence. Like I didn't feel any better being 10 kilos lighter than what I do now. So I think it's, you know, going through those sorts of things as well, that those perspectives and experiences, I'm not saying you have to, but I'm saying knowing that, oh, well, maybe it doesn't really have that much to do with how I look. Maybe it has more to do with the processes that got me there. Right. And just understanding that, being like, I've done my best and that's all I can do. So I've got to be confident in that.
Yeah. If I feel like I've ticked the boxes, achieved tasks, you know, I've been kind to myself along the way, I feel like I deserve it, then that's what puts the package together. But if you get like a body composition in a way that isn't authentic with your values and your goals and you've exhausted yourself, then you're not going to feel confident when you get there. Like at all. So it's all those other elements and just owning yourself as an individual and owning where you're at in your journey. That's what really builds a confidence when it comes to body confidence. But, you know, little things, again, you can still get your nails done, your hair done, and do all those little things that, you know, will help someone feel confidence maybe, but they're quite superficial and sort of one percenters. I'm not going to pretend that I don't like those things, but you can't just cover yourself in all of these superficial things if your mindset's not in check, because it still won't help. That's where we kind of get addicted to things, right? And more and bigger and all that.
And it's usually that like not enough narrative that people get stuck in. And I think you sort of come to that realization like, well, I actually set the bar of what's enough. And when I've hit that pinnacle of whatever good looks to me. And when we come to that realization, again, all through self-awareness of what our benchmarks are and who we're comparing ourselves to, that's when we can have clarity and confidence and reassurance in the direction that we're going and be content with it, like, and still strive to be better. But it really is like comparison the thief of joy. Like, it's so true, because a lot of the times that things that do knock us down is that comparing to something else.
Yeah, because we don't know all the elements of someone's life. So someone might have quote unquote body goals, but then, you know, they might not have kids like you, and maybe they're not that good of a mom, or, you know, the partner or the job. There are so many elements of someone. So it's impossible to compare yourself. And you made an awesome post the other day about this, but you just can't really compare yourself because we are all so different. Yeah. And why would you want to try and be someone else? It's freaking exhausting. Like,
yeah, yeah, exactly. I think my thought with that post, because that's what I was thinking of, was a lot of people look at like photos or transformation photos and go, why couldn't I do that in 8 weeks? Or why couldn't I achieve those results? Or why didn't my glutes grow like that? And I just think it's a trap, because like those photos or other people, they're not a catalog. Like, you can't just shop the website and be like, I'm going to get that program and get that result. It's not really how it works, even though that's how it's sold, you know? Yes. And it's just about being informed, being aware, awareness, coming back to that.
Yeah,
just always being really aware about what the benchmark is, what the goal is, and what we really want to come back to.
Yeah, yeah. And again, marketing is an evil thing. It's very misleading.
But a lot the consumer of people feels it.
It. Yeah, exactly. But so just recognize that just because someone else looks like that in 8 weeks, maybe they don't even, doesn't mean you have to. But sort of moving on to confidence in the gym as well, and when it comes to your own program, just start with something that you know you can nail, whether it be a movement or a way of dieting, okay? Don't overreach. A lot of people, and you'd get this too, they sign up, they're like, I can do 6 days a week, and they've gone from zero to six. And it's like, well, let's meet somewhere in the middle, tick that off, and then we can add a day on. Or if someone wants to go into an extreme calorie deficit, all right, let's just up it a little bit, know that you can nail it, and then we'll sort of go lower. It's important just to start with something that you know you can nail.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And like I said earlier, it's so much easier to progress than regress. And like, I've learned that lesson sort of the hard way, making assumptions about, I guess, people before you've been coaching them for too long. So I like to make sure that everyone starts at maintenance and everyone goes through like foundational, looking at skills and all those sorts of things before we make assumptions of where you should be, because there's no rush. Like, we would rather progress than regress, because it's really demotivating. And a lot of the times we have all these moving parts when it comes to our own health and fitness, and we just need to like reset and slow down and get ourselves to a good place.
Yeah, exactly. You sort of have to like earn the right to progress, because we know we don't want to injure people. We don't want to starve people. It's just not nice. Just prove that you can do the base work, and then we add weight. We, you know, do all these cool things. So just be okay with that as well. Getting a coach always helps as well, just with confidence, whether it be a face-to-face PT, or, you know, whether it be someone online or just someone that you can brainstorm ideas with as well. Just takes out all the guesswork. It's much easier.
Yeah. Reassurance from someone that you trust, because, you know, there's so much on the internet, and if you're trying to find the right answer, you're going to find like 500 of them. So like I said about the too many chefs in the kitchen, you need to have like a coach and someone primary that you're going back to get that reassurance from, because even type in calorie calculators and things like that, you're going to get 500 options. And it makes this question, and I hear this a lot from, especially speaking to all the coaches that coach themselves, I hear this a lot from them being like, oh, I just started doing this and I changed it to this, and then I did this program, and then I thought I'd go into, and they're just chopping and changing because they're getting so much information rather than being consistent, because your coach would tell you, no, you need to sort of do this. Whereas it's easy to give yourself a permission slip when you feel like you've got knowledge about knowledge.
Yeah, for sure. And now that sort of gyms are opening back up, in Sydney, sorry, everyone in Melbourne, still there's a lot of anxiety around going into a gym. People that you haven't seen in a while, we might not be that confident in our body and all of that. I think it's good just to maybe have a gym buddy as well, if you can, just someone to sort of hold your hand a little bit, come on, let's train, or just someone that you know is there as moral support. Having a gym buddy always helps. And then I think, I know that this is a big topic, but, you know, just wear something that makes you feel good and you're comfortable in. And whether that be a little bit of makeup, whether that be no makeup, whether that be bright colors, or if you want to blend in a little bit dark colors, just tune into what will allow you to feel like you can go in the gym and just get the job done without distractions and without overthinking, oh my God, how do I look?
Yeah. And if clothes make you feel uncomfortable or they're too tight, please change them. You know, I have this conversation a lot. I'm like, I feel great when I'm naked, and I go to the gym and I just feel like a mess. I'm like, is it the tights? Wow. Like, you know, what is it?
And actually, that's true sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes I feel fantastic when things are tight. I'm like, oh, take them off. I'm like, here we are.
You got to, yeah, prac- practice squatting and check how high up the shorts go up your bum. The worst thing is having to pick out a wedgie every 2 seconds. Like, so practice your movements in your clothes, or lift your arms up and see if everything stays in place.
You know, when I do a little bit of running now just throughout the week. I wear the full compression tights, like the 2XU, like compression.
Oh, yeah.
There's a difference between looking good and training for comfort, right? Where I'm like, when I'm running, right, these glutes, they need stabilizing. Like, I can't have things. The same, I've got my burly bra on. I've got this thing that my phone sits in. It's not a fashion statement, right? It's for comfort. So the same as, like, you know, week 4 of our cycles come in, we I feel like a water balloon. I feel I don't have confidence, right, in how I'm feeling. Clothes are fitting different. My uterus feels a bit swollen.
Yeah.
So I dress for the occasion. I wear Luke's jocks, like, around the house.
That's so good.
Yeah, we go through like 16 pairs a week between us.
You would.
You know, I just think it's important to really be like, when do I feel this lack of confidence in my body? Yeah. And I just see it so often with the clothes thing. Even ourselves, Danny, we usually have 2 wardrobes, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to squeeze into my size 6. Look, I don't feel too good. So we just remove the clothes, remove the problem.
Remove the clothes and remove the problem. I love that. That'll be a good segue into social situations and dating. Maybe next. That's a whole nother thing. We can be confident in gym clothes, but fuck, it's a nightmare finding normal people clothes.
Oh,
like everyday casual clothes.
I hate them. I've just come to this realization where, you know, I'm just not like anyone that lifts and has like a good amount of muscle mass, which is not born for standard generic clothing in the way. Look, look at the mannequins.
They are slowly changing though, but a lot of them are still quite, you know, slim.
Yeah, I just think, like, it's why I live in activewear. It's why I live in trackies. It's why I live in Luke's jocks. Like, and this is why I actually feel more comfortable in less clothes, because there's less restriction, like, on things, and there's less, like, things digging in. And for me, like, I have things always tight on my quads and uncomfortable around my waist because it's loose. And, you know, find a few brands that you like. I love, like, what's the dresses that are, like, really, they cling to you because they just mold to you.
Like Kukai and all that
stuff. Yeah, like I love that style rather than like something that doesn't give way. So it's just this, it's just about knowing these sorts of things and stop trying to fit into molds that aren't designed for you.
Yeah. And what I've found is not that we're, you know, ultimate fashionistas, but I
clearly not.
someone with sort of muscle and a bit of shape looks better, I think, in just basic clothing, as you said. Doesn't have to be too many patterns, doesn't have to be frilly this, frilly that. If you have something quite, you know, shapely, then we wear the clothes. We don't let the clothes wear us. And Paul was actually teaching me, because his mum's like a crazy fashion hair. She's massive in the industry. And, you know, he's obviously picked up fashion advice from him, and he's bloody me, which is embarrassing, but I'll take it. He's like, nah, you got to wear the clothes. You can't let the clothes wear you.
Oh,
I know.
Holy.
I'm like, oh, fuck.
Put that on a Canva.
So yeah, simple, like simplify, particularly when moving on to like social situations and dating. The last thing you want is to not feel good in what you're wearing.
Absolutely. It's really important just to make sure that you feel comfortable and own whatever you're doing, even if it's a pair of shoes, right? Like, if we feel uncomfortable, we lack confidence. It doesn't matter. So like, you know, it's about that whole, what's the saying of like, look good, feel good. It's almost like you have to dress for yourself and the occasion that you're doing. And there's also going to be different times where you have more confidence than not. And it's going to impact what you wear. Sometimes I just want to wear the hoodie and like just wear the trackies and train in that. And that's totally fine, because that's what I feel like.
Yeah.
Than what I should be doing.
And now that, you know, slowly, hopefully one day in the future there'll be more social events, not that I'd be bloody rushing to get to any. I'm kind of so used to my little bubble, but just do some research on the dress code. You know, there's always like a chat group before the event of girls being like, all right, show me your outfits, what are you wearing, and sending photos and all of that. Do your research, even if you're about to go on a date, you know. There's nothing wrong with asking the girls or the guys, you know, for a bit of bit of help. How do I look? This and that. Have fun with it as well.
Yeah. I've got a few, like I've got a 30th coming up and an engagement party and like a few different things. And it's like, I hate online shopping. I must be one of the only people. I hate it because nothing ever looks right on you.
True.
Like we just had this discussion. I'm like, how's everyone finding these dresses and they look like that?
Yeah.
I feel like I want to compare like what the model looks like and what me, right? It's just not what it should be. So I really like going to shops and walking around and trying things on. Like 9 times out of 10, I end up getting the dress or whatever that I did not expect. Or, you know, the one thing that your mum throws at you, like, oh, idiots. And then you put it and you're like, oh, okay, looks all right. Yeah. Oh, what is that? Definitely just like trial, error, and, you know, going with what's comfortable.
Yeah. And I feel like when shopping for clothes, you can't do it in a panic and you can't do it last minute, even though I know a few times you've done it last minute. I find the more stressed of a headspace 100%. I'm in, you just don't find it. It's as if your eyesight switches off and you just can't see anything. Where you're moseying down the shops, like, oh, that looks nice. That looks nice. And you're just so calm about it. Like, don't go shopping in a frantic mood.
Yep. I'm the same. Exactly right. When you've got time, you're not so like overwhelmed and you can actually see the things and what it would look like. Yeah. And there's nothing worse than spending like a whole day going around the shops and trying on all this shit to come home with nothing.
Oh,
because I get so angry. I get overwhelmed with too many choices. Yeah. Like if they're like, try this, I'm like, nothing looks good. And then I leave with nothing. It's the same as like, I always bitch out when I fill the shopping cart and I'm like, oh, there's too many things and now I'm leaving.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is, but
it must be the dopamine. I think it's the dopamine from filling up the cart and then you're just like, nah, fuck it. It's
or
just
if there's like
much.
One friction point, like I can't find my cart. I'm like, nah.
Yeah.
I think it's like the paralysis by analysis. I'm like
absolutely
thinking about, oh, can I hear? Will it get here in time? And I just, there's too many moving parts for me.
Too many. Yeah. Seriously. And when it comes to like actual events, just pick, like if let's just talk dating, for example, the classic people say, yep, let's go out for dinner. But for some people that can be so overwhelming because I don't know if you remember dating Luke at the start many moons ago, but you kind of overthink. Well, I do anyway. Is there something in my teeth? Yep. Like you want to eating and talking when you're nervous is fucking the worst experience ever. Mm-hmm. Yep. So like if that's too much, just pick an activity, even if it's the movies where you don't even have to talk, but you're kind of just there staring at the corner of your eye at them, or mini golf or something that you can distract yourself with. That always works. I've learned.
Yeah. I haven't been single since I was like 21 or 22, but I never used to go on dates where you'd sit across and just talk to each other. I was young, obviously. I'd be like, I'll see you out.
pretty much. Meet you at the club.
Yeah, meet you at the club. When I'm drunk and then like a confidence, right? It's a result. but like I used to, like when Luke and I first started dating, we would just go to a coffee shop or something. Like you'd sit next to each other rather than just like intimidating, like across the table romantic date sort of thing. Or like, you know, if I was single, like I would go on like day dates. I would like go somewhere and do an activity or have a mutual, I guess, interest, or go to the beach or go for a walk, like where you've got not distractions, but things that just lighten the mood.
Yeah. And then there's just something different between a day date and a night date.
Oh,
there's so much more expectations on the night date. So I would actually, good tip, I would bypass the night date and go start with a day date, and then you can call it, all right, gotta get home now and all that. Always have a way to opt out just in case, even if like a friend on standby, all right, call my phone now, oh, gotta go. No, hopefully we don't get to that point, but day dates for sure.
I was watching the you know, the series Sex Ed on Netflix. I was watching that, and the guy, it was so funny, he like must had a code word to his friend. He just wrote like a monkey or something and sent and then she's like, help, called him, and she was like, oh my god, I'm coming. He's like, and she's like already hung up, and he's like, yep, oh my god, I'm going straight away.
That's so like, good
having like a safeguard where you can like get out of jail free and just make sure like that gives me confidence, knowing that you're not stuck at the dinner table when he's a dweeb, right? Or like just like, I don't want to be in this situation. Dates are fun though. Like I would have loved that, going to like a museum or like
a museum.
Like, I would do something weird. Maybe not a museum. Art gallery. No. Like, I would love that sort of stuff. Whereas I feel like when you're 21, like when I was younger in uni, that's not what you did. You didn't, you know, Netflix wasn't even a thing.
No, there was no Netflix and chill, that's for sure. Just chill, oh God. And I think it's also important to just not, whether you're catching up with a friend or, you know, a date, just don't have expectations on the outcome of it. Like, just think of it, even if it's meant to be a romantic date, you're just seeing a friend, okay? Cool. Mm. If it works out, great. If it doesn't, all right, whatever, it's all part of it. But the more pressure we put on ourselves and, oh my God, like, it just makes it a shit show. So try and remove the expectations and recognize if you haven't been on a date in a while or even been out to a big party in a while, it's normal to feel a bit anxious. It's a new experience. There's a lot of things going on, but just like any skill, you have to practice that as well.
Mm. And they probably feel nervous too. You know, like I think that all the time when I'm chatting with new clients or just meeting someone, like if I'm nervous, they probably are too, and that's okay. So like, what can we do to make sure that we both feel comfortable and we get the best out of this? It comes with removing expectations, like what you just said. Yeah. I think when we expect something, we take the joy out of it because we take that unknown, like, you know, adventure, sort of like experimenting, exploring, checking. And I think like taking expectations off dates, and particularly like if you, even if you're not going on them and you don't have a partner at the moment, like not trying to force something and find someone and really just then, like I said, that expectation of you should be doing something or you should be somewhere that you're not, you know, it takes the joy out of life.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up too. I built my most confidence when I was single, actually, for 6 years. Well, 7 years nearly. So I love that. There's no right or wrong. Like, you'll know when you're ready for whatever event in your life. And yeah, just keep working on building your confidence, whether you're single, whether you're not, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, if you can't build confidence on your own, you really shouldn't be building it with someone else either. Like, you got to build confidence. It is dangerous. You know, it starts with you. And I think it's really important. A lot of the times people, if you don't have a good relationship with yourself, you can't have a good relationship with others.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing that's really going to build confidence. But there's so much to speak, and I feel like we've really gone into a few of the different cracks about where confidence shows up, where it doesn't, what it looks like, and hopefully some tips to be able to like build confidence in your own life.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. More than an hour and a half nearly. Good one. It's
a long one always. But we hope you did enjoy this podcast. And I just wanted to remind everyone, we did do a whole episode with Gabby recently on body confidence over on her own podcast as well. So that's another resource on confidence in general. But if you did enjoy this podcast, please do take a screenshot, upload it to your social media and tag the Level Up Podcast.
Thanks, everyone.